A61, number 18A.
Then we'll come to immortality. Soul as immortality. How could we explain that? Yeah?
I've been talking about resurrection in soul.
Yeah?
And mortality means death.
Yeah?
It's the direct opposite of resurrection.
Yes?
The negative form of it.
It's a negative
form. Negative form making a positive concept.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Bruce, you are, sorry. Michael?
Immortality is that which doesn't change, or that which is forever.
Yeah, that does not change.
Huh? It's broad sense.
Yeah, yes.
And that certainly is about everything else we've been talking about.
That was it. That was all about soul. Michael, another question which I shouldn't ask. Why is it not life? Why is not, is immortality not an idea of life?
Well, in another sense of the word, it does refer to it, but we were talking about that now.
Yeah. Oh, that's very clever. Yeah.
That's why I said
in the broadest sense. Yeah, yeah. So be careful when you read the textbook that naturally here and there, immortality may be in conjunction with life. But mostly it will have to do with soul. Because immortality means no changing, huh? No changing. Mm-hmm. But naturally, the moment you look at immortality as beginning and end, that it has no beginning and end, then it is life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have freedom as an idea of soul. Why is freedom an idea of soul? Not because Mrs. Eddy says so, but because it must be true in reality. Yeah?
Being free is to be never contained within anything. We've already decided that the soul is its own infinite within us, never in anything, so it must also constitute absolute freedom.
Yeah. No restriction, huh? Never in something.
Mm-hmm. In blindness, never in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unconfined.
Unconfined, yes. All right, we come to the next one, to joy, happiness, satisfaction, balance, rejoices, beauty, even beauty, quite a different set of qualities. How do they fit into soul? They seem to be of quite a different nature. Hmm? Up to now, practically everything seemed to have been fitting into each other quite nicely, and how you get now suddenly to joy and to happiness and to satisfaction. Yeah.
Well, as you start to ponder the fact that you are absolutely free, that you're never living within anything, you're totally immortal, that your identity is undisturbed and indestructible, you've just got to be pretty ecstatic with joy about that, so it's now time to be joy. And mm-hmm. I suppose there's a very natural flow on.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's a sense of harmony and the confidence that you have that soul has a capacity to insert itself, to have its perfect likeness predominate any conceivable, every conceivable situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gives you a sense of joy and happiness and freedom and satisfaction.
Harmony I like.
You like harmony. I don't like it. No, don't. It's not true. I like it too. But not as a soul. Even there, Don, I have to take my words back. Mrs. Eddy uses the term harmony in two ways. She uses it with soul also, mostly with principle. the inner meaning of harmony, as we will see when we come to principle, the inner meaning of harmony has naturally much more to do with principle and with system. It is the frictionless interaction and interrelationship of parts, which has to do with system. But very often she uses harmony in conjunction with soul, namely then when she uses the term harmony more in the soul sense of harmony. In that sense, that harmony gives you a sense of joy and a sense of inner freedom and what the harmony of music gives you. The balm of soul, the calm and balm of soul. It's like balm if something is harmonious. So it has a soul sense touch also. Namely, then when you look at harmony as its effect, how it affects us. When we look at harmony as what harmony intrinsically means, namely the interrelationship of parts which is frictionless, then it's typically principle. So that we cannot have any harmony intrinsically without principle, without system, without structure. But the touch of it, the feel of it, she uses then of, very much with soul. Just in this connection here with joy and happiness and satisfaction and all that. Did you hear what Rick was saying? Why joy, happiness, satisfaction, so on had to do with soul? Was that clear? He could see that the moment you have freedom, he linked it right back to freedom. If you have freedom, if there is nothing that hinders us, that restricts us, that dominates us, that nothing foreign that controls us, all the whole capacity can really express itself freely without any restriction, and that gives always a sense of satisfaction, of joy, of happiness. Yes. So this can be deduced from there. Self-abnegation, she says, is a rule of soul. Self-abnegation. Why should that be a rule of soul? Emma?
It goes right back to identity again, doesn't it? Because it's a self, that which we think of as our self is our identity. And you're denying, abnegating the sense of oneself as a mortal. As within a body or in anything.
Yeah.
It's really seeing our identity.
Yeah.
The soul.
Yeah. Is self an opposite of soul?
In a sense it is.
In a sense?
Yes.
I think it is. You were not quite sure because I asked a bit funny. I want to give you the assurance that it is. Yes, you see, self, ego, is always the counterfeit of true identity. It is the belief that one has an identity of one's own. That's the self. So everything that has to do with getting rid of the self, therefore of exchanging the self for the true identity, has to do with soul. So self-abnegation, getting rid of a false sense of identity, is naturally a rule of soul. Could you... Now, let's use once again, after many hours again, another rule which we haven't used very often. Would it ring true in your consciousness if we would call self-abnegation is a rule of mind? Would this ring true? Why not? Actually, it's easy now to say no when you know it's so. Why doesn't it ring true? Self-abnegation is a rule of mind. Harry?
There's no self in mind.
There is no self in mind. Huh? Mind isn't concerned with the self. Huh? Mind is concerned with knowing and with intelligence, huh? With creative ability, creative intelligence. Has nothing to do with identity, with a self. Huh? Therefore, it doesn't ring true. Huh? What about if we would say self-abnegation is the rule of spirit? Would that ring true? And why not?
Still no identity yet. But it's beginning, because we'd be beginning to make a choice there of what, so that our identity is going to appear.
Yeah.
But it couldn't be there yet, because we haven't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it hasn't become something.
What would you say why this wouldn't ring true? See, you caught it right away with mind, huh? And with spirit, why shouldn't self-abnegation be a rule of spirit? All right, Emma, you have a job.
You have no sense of self until you reach soul, because you have no sense of identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Jane said too. Huh? All right, it's all right, but it isn't quite the answer, yeah. Uh-huh. But somehow you feel it, huh? Self-abnegation is a rule of truth. Would that sound good?
No.
What about love? Self-abnegation is a rule of love. Isn't self-abnegation a rule of love? Don't you expect in love that you are selfless? Hmm? Well, you are, huh? So it could be a rule of love, huh? Uh-huh.
No, not really, because in love, that the whole tone of love, as I said, is one, it's a restful, fulfilled, completed state. Whereas self-abnegation is moving, it's a process almost, feel about it. Self-abnegation will lead to a state of love.
Yeah.
But it's the movement there. It's an exchanging going on.
Yeah.
Of false identity for a true identity.
Absolutely. Huh? There's only one possibility of all the seven. Mm-hmm. Because it has to do with the self and how to get rid of a self. Huh? Not in mind how to get rid of intelligence or of ignorance. Huh? Nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do in spirit how to get rid of matter or of the flesh. Huh? Not at all. Huh? It has actually to do with how to get away from a false sense of identity, from a false sense of ego, huh? The divine ego, the divine I. Huh? Yes. So, this is a rule, we haven't used that very often up to now, but use it, huh? When you have such statement, because they are so good, because they appeal at your spiritual sense now. They don't appeal very much anymore to your intellect. You hear much more the answer than you reason it out. Huh? And you just feel something would be fishy, huh? Yeah. Okay. Yes, then we have the rule of soul, just to end up with our whole list. Mm-hmm. Why has rule to do with soul? We had law, mind. We had order of spirit. What has rule to do with soul? Or I ask first the other way. Perhaps there are in here a few who have had a bit academical instruction. What is a rule? What is a rule compared with a law, for instance? Yeah, Michael, you tell us loud, huh? So that that you can tape it, huh?
Well, to me, a rule is a specifying of a particular thing that's applicable from a law. Law is very general. So if you're getting very specific, then it's relating to the identity.
Yes.
I don't know if I made that clear, but...
Law is general, you say, huh?
Yes.
And the rule is specific.
It's a specific application relating to a specific thing. It's a seed within itself idea again.
Yeah. Yeah. Therefore, you have soul as a rule, huh? or rule in soul. Huh? Yeah? It's a specific application. Huh? Therefore, would you know some rules in Christian Science? Rules in Christian Science must therefore be very specific application of a law. Laws are very general. For instance, rise in the strength of spirit to resist everything that is unlike God. Hmm? This is specific, huh? Rise in the strength of spirit to resist everything that is unlike God. This is specific. That's a rule. Huh? Another rule? Absolutely. Hold thoughts steadfastly to the good and the true, or something like that. Huh? This is a specific direction. Huh? See, it's not general. Huh? It's absolutely specific. It's very different from, say, rise in the strength of spirit to resist everything that is unlike God. Yeah? Therefore, can you see that you get those rules of practice practically all in the third part of the 12th chapter in the textbook. And the textbook, in practice, in the third part, is full of these rules, the rules of soul. Yeah. Because in practice you get all these specific rules. Huh? Practice, not the theory of Christian Science, you get the rules, but in the practice. Huh? Yes. Just as in arithmetic or so, you have specific rules, huh, that do only apply to certain calculations. Huh? You have rules. If you have 35 times 35, you have the rule that is 1,225. Hmm? Or 65 multiplied by its own 65, is 4,225. Huh? You have the rule that you take the 65, the 6, and add 1, and multiply it 6 times 7 is 42, and you add 25 at the end. You have these rules that only apply, say, here, when you multiply a number that ends with a 5 and multiply by itself. You have a specific rule. Huh? That does not apply to 26 multiplied by 26. Yeah. Was that too quick? Yeah. It just, you see, that's what makes up the rules in arithmetic. You have laws, say the laws of multiplication. They apply to every multiplication. Hmm? The laws. Whatever the multiplication is, you can always apply the same law. But there are specific cases of multiplication where you can apply a rule which is much quicker than the ordinary law. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? That one?
No, that one I didn't know.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now you got it, huh? Yes, we have gone through these ideas of soul, and let's see if we just can catch the main overall tone of the first three synonymous terms, so that free from lots of terms and words, we somehow get the impact of each of those three synonymous terms. When we did take the ideas of soul, we always got what? Always a sense that soul is changeless. That soul says, that which I am, I remain what I am, I never lose my identity. I'm always the same, that's the self-sameness of being. Now this applies naturally to the synonymous term just as well as to the ideas. So that each idea in the infinite one is an idea of soul, and therefore each idea always remains what it is and has its self-sameness, it never loses its identity. And I guess if we get just that tone, we feel that we have touched on the third synonymous term. Now, if we compare that with mind and spirit, and by comparison, so to say, feel much more even the individual aspect of each synonymous term, then you could see that what soul is telling us has nothing to do really with mind. In mind, we never felt that mind was telling us that mind always remains what it is, that mind is what it is. Though naturally, mind is soul, but as a combination. But in mind, now we refresh our ideas. In mind, we felt mind had to do with that aspect of being which says, I am the infinite, intelligent, powerful, active creator of everything. I am that which calls worlds into being. I am the cause that manifests everything as infinite ideas. Can you hear the tone of mind as the productive, intelligent, active, powerful, manifesting, lawful mind? You feel that? Boom! Always the terrific impulsion of mind coming out. That's the creative mind. Combined with that power is naturally the intelligent activity of it. So that mind, as an intelligent, active power, always has an idea. All right. When we came to spirit, did we have that woo, woo, woo sense? Nothing like that in spirit. You had really the calm reflection of spirit that said, you know, you mind, you are the only one. There is nothing besides it. You mind are the only creative, intelligent, active, powerful, manifesting, lawful mind. You are the only. That's spirit. The moment I say, you are the only, there is nothing beside it. So that it says, only that mind is going on, and you have spirit. When you come to soul, we get a feeling, and that mind that is alone going on, that is the powerful, active, all-vision, all-seeing, all-hearing, all-knowing mind is always what it is. It never changes. That's soul now. It is what it is, and never is anything else. It is unchangeable. It's always the same, always the same, immortally the same, never changes. And you get the sense of soul. And therefore, in a way, you can feel that these three constitute the nature of every being. Constitutes the nature of being, capital B, and it constitutes the nature of all being, small b, of all ideas. So that we can see mind that creates infinite ideas. Spirit says these ideas are spiritual, there are only ideas, there are nothing besides itself, nothing besides ideas. There is no material universe besides the ideational universe, and these ideas are unchangeable. They don't come and go. They are unchangeable. And so we feel now we have the unchangeable nature of the universe of ideas. Yes? So, can we see that up to this point, we actually have not yet a sense of what these ideas are going to do? Only when principle will come, principle will say, what I'm going to do with these ideas? Yeah? so that the demonstration of these ideas will be through principle, and will say they demonstrate themselves then as ideas of life, as ideas of truth, of health, as ideas of love, of fulfillment. So we build up through mind, spirit, soul, the nature of being, and in this way have a sure foundation, gain a sure foundation. Can you now see the very different tones of mind compared with spirit, compared with soul? Just always think back that when we were reading in earlier years the textbook and we came across spirit or soul, we could hardly distinguish between spirit and soul. What is spirit? What is soul? And now, through these ideas, you have a very clearly defined distinction between mind and spirit. Very clearly defined. Very clearly defined distinction between spirit and soul. All right. Now, what are the counterfeits? Again, I think we only want to go through the noumenon counterfeits. Do you know by now what we mean, the noumenon counterfeits? What do you think are the noumenon counterfeits? A counterfeit of an identity? Loud? You have to speak loud. You have to convince the whole class about what you say.
Body?
Mm-hmm. That's something we have in our... Yeah. It's actually a counterfeit of identity, body. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Non-entity.
A non-entity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Quite right, yeah.
You asked that specifically.
Yes, specifically, yes. A non-entity, yeah. You could say identity is an entity, and the counterfeit is a non-entity. You know, it's a funny thing. What would you say if you would not know anything? What would you say is a counterfeit of an identity?
Everything?
No. You will just say a counterfeit. Huh? You see?
Yeah.
Counterfeit per se. Huh?
Yeah.
If you have an identity, if you have a coin, huh? And the counterfeit of a coin would be the counterfeit. Huh?
Yeah. You know, in math, it's very funny that you say that, because when you write the sign identity, and as soon as you change the inverse operation, you just might write a minus sign there.
Yeah?
So you don't write anything. You don't change anything.
You don't change anything.
So actually it does work that way.
Yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah? So can you see the very fact of a counterfeit, is that which is handled by identity. Just as we said, you know, we had a similar thing with spirit. What did we say? What spirit? Actually, it's the most pregnant or the most characteristic negative. Huh? We said dualism. Huh? Dualism. Though we have dualistic sense through all the seven synonymous terms. Huh? We have divine mind, mortal mind. Huh? We have soul, sin, principle, people, life, death, truth, error, love, hate. They are all opposites. Huh? And the inner nature of spirit is that it is just one and the only. Therefore, the great opposite is dualism. Hmm?